what I've heard, and this is what I can speak to, is what I've heard is that there is a legitimate identity crisis. And I say legitimate because, like, yes, that would be huge, working towards something your entire life, achieving your life dream of playing on the world stage or, you know, the highest level of your sport. And then you're not doing that anymore. All of a sudden, there's one day you wake up, you're not doing it, whether it's injury, you know, you choose to retire at that moment, whatever it is. And now you're not doing that anymore. And it's something that's so exciting, adrenaline, high energy. Where are you going to find that now?
Today, I am joined by a, you know, it's a hilarious story, actually, how we met. But I would say old friend. Can we say old friend? Because
yeah.
A couple of years ago, Taylor Wells, thank you so much for tuning in. I have a question for you right off the bat before you're even allowed to introduce yourself.
All right.
When did you realize, at what point did you realize that New York is way better than California? Like, when did it click?
Not only are you kicking off with a question, you're kicking off with a loaded question. Hi, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me. Oh my gosh. I was never cut out for LA, I don't think. I go back sometimes, I'm like, no, but New York is superior. Sorry to everyone from my home state. Love visiting, but New York's my place.
It's good in spurts. No, we love you, LA. We love you, California. You got your good side, but New York, I think, will always be number one. It's home for me, but also I guess you would call it home for you now too.
Yes, I would say I definitely consider New York home now. It's been over 4 years now. In fact, I think in 2 weeks will be my 4 year anniversary of working at MLS, but I've been in New York for longer than that.
Wow. And what was before the MLS, before we get into everything? I'm interested to know.
Before MLS, I was looking for a job in professional sport here in New York. That's why I moved to New York in the first place. But then before that, I was in California finishing up my master's.
Very cool. So to catch everybody up, I know I started off with the bombshell of a question and a very loaded question, but I wanted to introduce you properly and obviously want to give it back to you so I don't do your bio a disservice. But currently you are working, I don't want to say at the MLS, in the MLS, for the MLS?
At MLS, for MLS,
For MLS, so not the. Okay, mm-hmm. that's interesting. I want to talk about that later, the part, because there's the Premier League and there's La Liga, which is the league, right? So it's interesting to see that the MLS is not the MLS.
Well, think about what it stands for, Major League Soccer. You don't play in the Major League Soccer, because soccer is the noun, Major League are descriptors.
There you go.
Now we're doing a grammar lesson before you introduce me. Hi, my name is Taylor, and I'm a huge nerd.
Yeah, I'm so fun at parties, I promise. Okay. But for those that are listening, Taylor is the senior coordinator of player engagement at MLS. It's going to be an amazing conversation because it's almost twofold. In one sense, and I'm not going to put words in your mouth, we're talking about what she does and how she helps the athletes that are in the league in their transition, both on and off the field, and also how she has created this space of opportunity in sports for herself. So there's a lot of people that can listen to this. In one sense, it's the athletes that can listen, and it's also people that can get amongst the industry of sports and see where that can take them. So Taylor, thank you so much for joining and taking your time on this Friday. How is everything going?
I want to give the knee jerk. Things are good, but also like things are heavy out there right now. But also at the same time, a lot of things are really good. So it's a balancing act. But I think that is what is called, what do you say, being human. So we're out here being human.
Yeah. No, things are heavy right now. And it is a breath of fresh air to do these, you know, pockets of an hour just to unplug and to, you know, have a conversation with someone to hopefully move the needle in someone else's life during these heavy times. And obviously, our prayers go out to everything that's going on in Ukraine and the people there. And also there was a death in women's soccer yesterday. Do you care to touch upon that?
I wasn't too close to the situation, but I did hear about the death of Stanford women's soccer player, and, you know, thoughts, prayers, love go out to her family, her teammates, her loved ones. It's unimaginable, honestly.
It is. It's always difficult, and it's amazing how together we all become through sport and how one, you know, death can rock so many people, and it's difficult to take. But let's keep the heaviness in the world. The heaviness will be there when we get done with this podcast. So let's keep on pushing. Give us a brief background. Obviously, you're from California and you moved your way to New York. So work us through that transition of moving to New York.
Well, I always wanted to, I shouldn't say always, but since I was in college, I wanted to work in professional sport. I grew up playing sports, all different sports. Soccer was my main sport until I had back surgery at the age of 12, a scoliosis correction. And my doctor was like, let's cool it on the contact sports, which I guess soccer is considered a contact sport. So from then I played volleyball and track in high school. And when I got to college, I was recruited for the track team, but I decided that instead of playing sport, I wasn't passionate about running track. So instead of putting all those hours towards a sport that I wasn't super obsessed with, I wanted to work in the industry that I was obsessed with. So I got an internship with the LA Clippers and did that my freshman year. And I was like, this is it. I found where I want to be in this world. And so finished out at Concordia University, Irvine with a bachelor's in mass communications, moved on to La Sierra University. I have an MBA with a concentration in marketing from them. And then once I finished out at La Sierra, I decided to move to New York City to pursue that career in professional sport because it seemed to be the hub of it all. We already covered the fact that LA was not my place. I considered the Bay Area for a time, but too few opportunities there, when New York just felt like the place to be when it comes to professional sports in the United States. So moved here and applied for what felt like every pro sports entry-level job under the sun and just did not hear back from anyone. Any sport. I was like, I will take any sport. And I didn't know a whole lot about soccer back then, honestly, professional soccer, that is. Mm-hmm. So I had made a friend in the neighborhood where I lived at the time in Brooklyn. And she was saying what are you doing? Like, you have a job yet? And I was like, no, and I don't want to hear about it. Okay, I'm trying. And she said, I have a friend who works at a temp agency. She can just get you a temporary job somewhere just to like make ends meet. And I was like, I don't want a temp job. I want my dream job. And she was like, what you want to do is pay rent. And I was like, yeah, that's true. So I had an interview at this temp agency and she's like, hi, we're sourcing talent for the fashion industry. And I was like, okay, sure. I'm not looking for my Devil Wears Prada moment, but like, I'll take it. I need to, yes, pay rent. And I said, but do you have anything in sport? And she said, no, I said fashion. I was like, what? But like anything at all, like, I don't care what it is. And someone walked by, she's another recruiter, and said, did you say sport? And I said, yes. Do you know something in sports? And she goes, I've been trying to fill this role at Major League Soccer forever. Can you start Friday? And I was like, sure. And she's like, you don't even know what it is. And I said, I don't care what it is, let me just, and so that's how I fell into Major League Soccer. I was the temporary executive assistant for a deputy commissioner and for executive vice president of communications. And it was really cool to be able to work with and learn from the top of the top at Major League Soccer. And I mean, yes, I was putting water bottles on tables and scheduling meetings, and that was my job, but just to be able to watch them work and see how they talk to each other and see what their schedule was like, I realized I want to be in one of those seats one day in my career. And they were kind enough to mentor me. And I decided that I was going to stay at the company even after my temp period ended. So I just did a lot of networking and ended up in player engagement, where I am now, since we last spoke, the manager of player engagement. So that's a new thing for 2022 that I'm really excited about and grateful for, a little promotion.
Wait a minute. That happened in the course of the last week?
No, it happened early this year. Where are we? We're in March. Yeah, okay. No. So I got a promotion this year, which is really nice. Ooh, go me.
Love that.
Yeah. And even more exciting, maybe, since I started at MLS in the past 4 years, I fell in love with soccer. And now I can't imagine working in another sport. It's the world's favorite game. So it's where I want to be.
Oh my goodness. Okay,
it's just so crazy. Yeah.
So sport obviously was always, apart from that injury, how did that happen, that back injury?
It was scoliosis. So it was just my back was crooked and it was crushing my organs. So we needed to fix that. And so I now have 2 rods and 20 screws down my spine and just living life. I forget they're there, but they did keep me from going further in soccer.
Okay. But the taste for sport was always there. So now you realize that you needed to stay amongst it. It wasn't really happening in LA. So you came to the hub, as you say, and mm-hmm. you were able to. It sounds seamless when you put it like that, but it seems also like it was months and months of heartache and a lot of doors closed.
Yes, it sounds seamless in retrospect. I'm like, wow, and this fell into place and this fell into place. But in the moment, I was like, I hate everything. Should I go back? Should I pivot back into finance where I worked for a little bit in college? Like, what should I do? And I'm so, so glad that it worked out the way that it has. And since starting at MLS, I also began my law degree at Fordham Law. I'm an evening student in my third of 4 years at Fordham Law, because I learned from, you know, my time in the executive office that a law degree and legal experience can be really helpful as an executive. So just so many doors have opened since then that, yes, it looks seamless, but it was not, but I wouldn't change a thing.
Awesome. Love that. So player engagement. Walk us through what that entails and walk us through what that actually means. So player engagement for whom? Player engagement for what? What does that look like?
Yeah, so there are a lot of names for player engagement, and you go from league to league, team to team, and they all have different titles. But it, you know, whether you want to call it player engagement, player development, athlete development, it's basically making sure that our athletes are taken care of off the field, that they are good to go. In terms of all different types of things. I mean, I'm here speaking as an individual. I'm not speaking for Major League Soccer, but I can talk a little bit about what we do. And it's all on our website as well, mlssoccer.com/player engagement. But we help our players figure out all different things, their post-playing careers. In some cases, their para-playing careers, their education, whether formal or informal, financial literacy. We even dabble in mental wellness, that type of thing, because in MLS, we're a little bit of a weird case because our players are employees of the league office. We're a single entity, whereas in most professional sports leagues, they're employees of the clubs or the teams themselves. But for me, it's like they are our employees. We should take care of them just like my company takes care of me. And also, it's the right thing to do. There are people who often aren't always perceived as people, whether by fans or maybe by the business side. And so the fact that we are like, no, we need to help this guy figure out where his kids need to go to school. Like that's important. Those types of things really help humanize the players in a way that I think is, I shouldn't say overdue, but it is very, very necessary. And in the end, don't we all perform better at our jobs when our house is in order, when our life is in order? So it will only ever serve to improve on-field play, even though that's not the ultimate goal when it comes to us as player engagement employees.
Wow, that's huge. You used an amazing word there to humanize the player. And a lot of times I think we do take it for granted that they're almost like disposable, right? We see them on TV. We expect them to show up and be at their best. But, you know, at the end of the day, they are humans.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Wow. And it's been good to see conversations be had in different sports, different leagues about, for example, mental health, how important that is for an athlete, as it is for, I don't know, all of us. So the fact that athletes now, even though they're on a stage and, you know, have bigger platforms than a lot of us do, that they are willing to have these tough conversations, which really is important for the rest of us lowly mortals who can be like, yes, so now I can talk about how I've been struggling with this as well. So it's been really cool to see that shift happen.
Right. And it's true. It's a conversation that has been had more nowadays, where a lot of times, especially male athletes, we weren't talking about the mental health side of things and a toll that it does take, because we've dedicated a lot of our lives to these roles, and then it does take its toll. So that leads me to my next question. When you work with these athletes, what do you find that the hard, because obviously you want to help them off the field. And I'm going to ask two parts of the question. The first part is, when you help them off the field, is that during their career? And then, or is it more in the transition period of their career? And then I'll give you the second part in a second.
Oof. Well, to answer the first part of your question, it's a both and. I can speak for MLS specifically, but we work with our active players who are currently, you know, signed MLS teams playing tomorrow and Sunday, as well as our former players who have retired out of the game, whether they're or not only retired out of the game, but they could be playing in another league somewhere else. And we are also beginning to work with our pipeline of prospects, our academy players, and then of course MLS Next Pro is coming on board. So we have a whole bunch of different player population groups that we're working with. But like I said, it's both and. It's those transitions that we in player engagement really focus on, because that's where the hard part comes in life, is when you're transitioning, in my case, from California to New York, trying to figure out my next step. But imagine going from being a normal 14-year-old. We just signed about 2 14-year-olds in the past month. A 14-year-old, a high school, what, sophomore, freshman maybe? All of a sudden, you're a professional athlete. Like, huh? Like, who's there to help this kid? Like, what? And that's where player engagement comes in. And I, you know, many of them go on to thrive. And so I shouldn't even just be like, oh, they need us. But like, transitions are hard for anybody. Or if you're going from being a professional athlete for the bulk of your adulthood to now suddenly you've retired. I mean, I don't want to preach at the choir here, but like it's suddenly you're figuring out what are your next steps. And it's like, who am I? What do I do? And those transitions can be really, really difficult. Even moving from club to club, like my whole family is here and I'm needing to move across the country or in some cases move to Canada. Like that's a whole thing. And so we're there to help them in those moments of transition.
That's huge. And that's such a great segue because that's really the listeners of this podcast are those that have leveraged the vehicle of sports and now maybe want to take it into their next chapter. What would you say the biggest hurdle is, or a few examples of a couple of hurdles in that transition? So they've had a career, maybe it's a great career, maybe it's just a kind of a mundane career, quote unquote. What would you say is the biggest hurdle crossing over?
Crossing over, that sounds so bleak. I think
what it feels like.
I didn't experience, I mean, I did at age 12. Oh no, but I really can't even begin to put myself in the shoes of someone who's going through it. But what I've heard, and this is what I can speak to, is what I've heard is that there is a legitimate identity crisis. And I say legitimate because, like, yes, that would be huge, working towards something your entire life, achieving your life dream of playing on the world stage or, you know, the highest level of your sport. And then you're not doing that anymore. All of a sudden, there's one day you wake up, you're not doing it, whether it's injury, you know, you choose to retire at that moment, whatever it is. And now you're not doing that anymore. And it's something that's so exciting, adrenaline, high energy. Where are you going to find that now? And that's, I think that's a really big thing. What is your next passion? Like, well, I don't have any other passions. I always only loved soccer, but what's your next passion? And so we in player engagement and I, you know, with the friendships that I've built with players and former players myself, love to help them uncover what their passions are outside of soccer, even while they're playing. And sometimes they get really excited about something. They like, I didn't know I loved this. Oh my gosh, can I do this at the same time as I play? It's like, well, you get off practice at what, 3 p.m. every day. I think you have some time. I think you can find some time. So it's really great to be able to help them prevent that issue of, well, what else am I passionate about at a time when they need a paycheck and health insurance because they don't have that anymore. Right.
I may throw you under the bus on this, but.
Oh no.
But before we, I do any of these cool down conversations, we always have like a pre-call where we get to know each other a bit more. And you were explaining to me a little bit of your role. And I'm sorry if this, you know, gets you fired, but I'm going to say it anyway. It says basically you babysit 800 grown men.
I would never say that. Why are you making stuff up?
I don't think you said it, but someone said it while we were talking and it just came through the airwaves. I don't know how it happened.
Weird.
But it's funny, right? It's funny, but it's also based on what you just said is that it is so true because they know one thing and that transition is like, I haven't even put any thought into this next thing. So it's kind of like, I need to hold the hand in order to start to put these next steps in place.
Yeah. I mean, we all need a hand all the, you know, there's no way to get through this life without support. You know, they talk about the self-made billionaires. Ain't none of us self-made. I don't care if you started off with $0 in your bank account. No one is self-made because there's always a village around us helping us get to where we need to go. And I'm so grateful for the village that, you know, have surrounded me and helping me get to this point of where I am. And my off-the-cuff quips when they happen are obviously said with full, you know, love and appreciation for the fact that the people that I work with are experts at what they do. How often can you say someone is an expert at what they do? But when you're a professional athlete, like that deserves some respect. And what's really exciting is that we get to draw out of them a lot of transferable skills that can be applied to other careers and other passions after they play, or again, even while they play. So for example, we host some career development events in the off season. And that's one of the activities we do is talk about how soccer has prepared you for a post-playing career. And they're like, that's all I know. I only know how to kick a ball. And we're like, no, you know how to work in teams, how to lead from the bench, how to thrive under pressure, how to overcome adversity, how to take criticism. Those are things that we mere mortals in corporate America have to learn on the job. You guys already have that built in. We can teach you how to use Microsoft Excel, how to sound professional in an email, how to put together, you know, a business plan or whatever it is that you're wanting to do, but we can't teach you those things. Those are things that you already bring to the table. So it's really cool that, you know, watching them realize, wait, I can do this. Like, I can thrive in another setting outside of soccer, when they're so accustomed to being an expert at something. And that's, for me, that's one of my favorite parts of the job.
Wow. And it's very true, because what it took to get to that point is not easily duplicatable in, I'll use your words, a mere mortal, if we can translate it. Now, because the athlete has had a great career in that realm of athletics, doesn't necessarily mean that right away it's going to be a shoe-in for, you know, the next chapter. So those skills still have to, it's just like starting over and trying to get your left foot better. You still have to do the hours and put the skill and stuff like that in. What would you say the transition period is like when they do finally find something that, hey, you know, okay, I'm going to put my eggs into this basket. How quick does it look?
It is so different for everybody. I can't even begin to answer that question in generalities. Mm-hmm. I've seen players who, you know, I'm so proud of and they're so deserving, transition right into like an assistant GM position right off of playing. Wow. And that's because they've been networking for years and learning for years and been in the GM's office saying like, I want to learn from you, I want to do this someday type of thing. So they've built that groundwork. So it seems incredibly seamless for them. But there are players who years later are still like, I don't know who I am. What am I doing here? Odd jobs here and there, still trying to figure it out. And that's great. It's a beautiful place to be in as well, because, you know, the future's still ahead of you. You can still find that passion that you might have yet to be uncovered. So it's just so different for every player. It depends on family situation, depends on age, depends on condition of retirement, skills, education level, what preparation they may or may not have in different careers. And also in the end, what they want and what they want to do and be. So it's just so different for every player that I can't even begin to answer that. And you see that in non-athletes as well, is like, well, how long does it take to get a job? Well, do you want to be a doctor or do you want to work at Starbucks? Like, both are great jobs, but they have different time frames, different timelines for how to get there. So I think the same goes for athletes.
Totally. I was speaking with an agent friend of mine in England, and we were talking about doing a conversation, but we speak all the time because, you know, he's helped me before and we stay in touch. But I wanted to touch on what you talked about, how MLS Next is now coming into play. And there's young athletes that are getting signed very young, you know, all of a sudden your profession, it's life changing. And he works predominantly in Europe and in England, where what I love about what the MLS is doing is they're really taking care of their players, because the same thing has been happening in let's say England, for example, where players sign their first professional contract at 14, 15 years old. All of a sudden they're thrown into these amazing academies where they don't have to lift a finger apart from just focusing on playing. And so their food is taken care of, their travel is taken care of, their houses are taken care of, everything is taken care of. And then when it becomes time to sign their next pro contract or to be renewed, maybe they don't get it and they don't have a second option. And all of a sudden it's like, well, thank you for your time. We promised you the world, but it's time to go. Now they have zero life skills at that age. And it's difficult for them to, because again, identity is wrapped around being a footballer. It's difficult for them to transition. And I love the fact that you guys are looking into this from, okay, MLS Next is an amazing opportunity, but we're also got to steward these athletes in the process just in case that does happen. Because regardless, a small percentage of that percentage is going to make it into the league. And you guys are doing a great job in that transition, because not everyone's going to get there.
I appreciate that. I appreciate those words. And I mean, like I said at the beginning of this, it's partially just because it's the right thing to do. These are humans, especially at such a moldable age, that we want to make sure that they're taken care of. We need more good humans in the world. So let's come alongside them and help them make sure that they're on the path where they need to go so they can be a good human and contribute to this world. But also, as a business enterprise, Major League Soccer LLC is not here to do the Lord's work. You know, we're not a charitable organization. We are a business. And in the end, our goal is to not only, you know, put on a professional sports league, but also to grow the game of soccer in North America. So if we take care of our young footballers, they're only going to grow into, you know, maybe it's professional footballers, maybe it's coaches, maybe it's referees, maybe it's people who work on the business side, but we want them to be as strong and as capable of humans as they can be and continue in our goal of growing the game of soccer in North America. So it really is this big symbiotic thing that is serving us well in a whole bunch of different ways.
That's fantastic. So the question I have now is, you know, with your, you've been in the at MLS for 5 years now, right? That's the anniversary that's coming up, 4 years now for the anniversary that's coming up. You've been amongst the sport industry since you were in California. That's what you wanted to do. What would you say the biggest need to be filled in the industry is, based on what you've seen in player engagement, based on what you've seen in other areas? What would you say needs to happen in the workplace, on the field? What are some things that, again, you're speaking for yourself, but what are some things that you see that, you know, we can be change agents in this area?
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that we already touched on is the humanization of our athletes. And I mean, I'm grateful to be on the actual ground floor of that. Like, my boss and I have been, I was the first player engagement hire that my boss, Dr. Jamil Northcutt, he's the senior vice president of, now it's called player and competition relations, but he was hired as the VP of player engagement. And then it was the two of us building this thing. And now it's three of us building this thing for the past 4 years. And it's been really, really cool to see it grow and flourish and how many people are on board with it. So that's been hugely inspiring to me. And I think that on the business side of things, again, speaking for myself, but I'm grateful to see that this has really been taking shape in my organization as well, but is the DE&I space, diversity, equity, and inclusion, making sure that not only does our staff and our players represent our, you know, population in our country, or at least in the regions and the markets that we're in, but also our leadership as well. The top levels of our sport on the business side need to reflect the diversity that we claim to want to have in all other levels and layers of our business. And you can see this in other sports as well. It's like, who are the coaches versus who are the players? Who are the owners versus who are the players or the fans? Who are the, you know? And not only the athletes, but of course, you know, I work in a men's league, but I want to see more women as well, and gender non-binary friends at different levels in our industry. And I think we always say diversity makes us better. Diversity is what makes us great and cool. So where is it at the high levels, you know, in the boardrooms, at the executive tables, in our ownership groups? Because I really do believe it does make us better. And inequity does need to be addressed. But honestly, only growth and business growth and revenue growth will happen when we start to diversify at all the levels. And not only that, but also just becoming more of a prominent voice in those different conversations that have been going on in the world. And it's been really, really great to see a lot of sports leagues, teams, and athletes taking that mantle when it comes to things like Black Lives Matter or, you know, anti-LGBTQ. Oh, wait, no, I'd be saying anti-homophobia. You're never going to be anti-LGBTQ. Like, where am I going with this?
Wait a minute. I didn't hear about that one.
No, thankfully that is at least not present in the sport I am a fan of. And if it was, I would no longer be. But like, it's been really cool being a part of those conversations. And when you put the stamp, like the MLS crest on a Black Lives Matter tee, and then put that on a t-shirt that they wear pregame, it's just like, yes. Like, that's so cool to see. Remember back in 2020 when we had the MLS is back tournament in the bubble in Orlando? Remember we had bubbles? Like, we just lived through a pandemic. We're still living through a pandemic. Wow. Mm-hmm. It was just, there was a moment where all of our Black players who were in the bubble, led by the BPC, Black Players for Change, stood around the game and like raised a black fist and wore these shirts that said Black Lives Matter. And I happened to be watching that game with my grandfather, my white grandfather. And I'm, for those listening, I'm half black, half white. And I was watching with my white grandfather and he was like, what does their shirt say? And I was like, oh, it said Black Lives Matter. And he was like, well, why? And I was like, well, and my grandpa, I love him very much. We're very close, but his politics are not as progressive as mine are, and perhaps as progressive as they could be. But he was like, well, of course the lives matter. Like, why do you have to put that on a t-shirt? Like, that's stupid. And I was like, well, unfortunately, grandpa. And I got to talk to him a little bit more about the movement. And I got to tell him, like, I was in the streets in New York protesting because all this. And he was just like, wow, I never thought about it that way. I'm proud of you. And that was really cool to hear, because he, you don't hear about that stuff on certain news stations that he might watch that I don't condone, so I don't want to say on your podcast. But it was just really cool that sport could be a platform to have that conversation with him.
Yeah, so that was the, you saw it in the flesh of what one image could do to change the perspective of one person, and you know, multiply that times the amount of viewers that you get, then maybe change is happening.
Exactly. It's been really cool to see that on the ground floor. I realize you just talked your ear off for like 5 minutes, but that's just, I just get so excited about that stuff.
It's not my ear, it's whoever's listening. So
yeah, sorry, y'all. Or you're welcome, y'all. I don't know.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, we'll see. That's huge. So that in regards to, you know, the need to be filled in the industry, you painted a perfect picture for diversification and more inclusion, which is, you know, if in a world sport, I mean, what better way to have a microcosm of what it could be, right? Because like, you go anywhere in the world and a ball starts rolling, then it's a bilingual, it speaks all languages. It's amazing. And I think that that's been really great for, if I can plug my own self, when I first went to England, I mean, the in a changing room, the different cultures and religions and morals and values and everything, that's just a melting pot for what could be disaster, is put to the side because we have a common goal. And then next thing you know, it's, you know, you're sharing a dinner with, you know, a Muslim or, you know, a Christian, and it's beautiful. But that it's encaptured in soccer. And it's like, once you work in soccer, like you do, you're like, it can happen. We can make, you know, there's going to be differences. Yeah. There's going to be conflict, but it can exist, you know? And I think that you're starting to see that the more you're around it too. And, you know, for the listeners, it's just by watching the game, you'll start to realize how amazing it is. But not just stopping there is what I'm hearing, what you're saying. Yeah, one, being athletes and being diverse in that setting is kind of always been there. It's gotten a lot better, but now starting to move into the boardroom, starting to move into the ownership of some of these clubs.
Definitely. Like, I know, Bax, you're a Liverpool supporter.
Yes, ma'am.
And I remember back in during the lockdown, when everything in the world was via Zoom, I remember Liverpool was having a practice via Zoom, and like a recording of it got put on Twitter. It was someone's birthday. Do you remember this? And like, I forget what player's birthday it was, but they were all singing happy birthday. And then Klopp was like, all right, now you tell him happy birthday in your language. And they said happy birthday in like Dutch or whatever. Now you tell him happy birthday in your language. And it was just like probably 17 different languages. I made that number up. All saying happy birthday to whichever player it was. This is not a very specific story at all, but I just remember that it was just like, wow, the diversity on that squad. I can't imagine what that locker room's like. And that's not just unique to Liverpool. That's, you know, so many different locker rooms. And so that was just really cool to see. And that they shared that snippet on Twitter or wherever it was. I was like, wow, that's mind blowing.
It is. If you ever want to, for everyone that's listening, if you ever want to see that, they, before every training session, if it's someone's birthday, they'll, not just that Zoom one, but they'll sing happy birthday in all the languages that, that are amongst the team. And it's amazing to hear also, because you'd think like, you know, if there's the English one and then maybe there's Egyptian, Mo Salah, like everybody knows the words in each language, which is amazing to me, like for happy birthday. So I was like, it's one thing to know maybe. Yeah, that's what's cool. So they obviously pick it up, you know, the more you're around the team, because they do it for every birthday. So everybody.
Oh, I didn't know that part. Wow, cool. I should let you tell that story.
Yeah, no, well, it's a team effort. Let's do it. okay, so cool. So now we've talked about your role in player engagement. I want to also, and it was a great transition for what you talked about in regards to, you know, being a game changer and being more diverse and more inclusive. You're obviously a woman of color and you're in a more of a male dominated industry. So I want to get into talking about that a little bit, but I also want to ask you first, we heard a little bit in regards to like the hurdles that you got over to get to this point, but I want to talk about the biggest trial that you found in your life that actually turned out to be a blessing in this journey towards getting to where you are.
The biggest trial. Wow. Thinking about trials, I mean, I remember as someone who very much likes stability, coming to New York with no job and just a dream of working in sport was honestly very out of character for me. And thankfully, like, circumstance made it so that it was possible, it was feasible. But that was really tough for me to not be sure about what was next. And so I think, I mean, while I can't relate to an athlete's journey, a professional athlete's journey in a lot of ways, the question of like, what's next? Where am I going next? What's next for me in that moment was really tough, especially in a city as expensive and as fast paced and as competitive and ambitious as New York City. That was a really tough time. But and I fell into soccer, and I've got to be completely honest that I was a little bit disappointed that I didn't fall into a sport that I was more familiar with, that I was more passionate about. But the blessing in disguise there was, like I said earlier, this is now my favorite sport. And I can't imagine working in another sport because it is the global sport. And I'm someone who's passionate about, you know, being a quote unquote, this is so cliche, but like a global citizen. Like I love to travel. I want to learn to speak languages. And I very much love, you know, studying intercultural communication. That was part of my undergraduate degree. So it's been really cool working in the most diverse North American sports league, where we have players from I don't even know how many countries nowadays. And getting to work with the players, that's my job, is to build relationships with these guys. And it's like, oh, you're from this country. Cool. Tell me about something you guys do that I don't do. Wow, that's fascinating. I want to teach me your ways. And so I think that's been one of the biggest blessings after that quote unquote trial. I mean, it's not even that big of a deal, but honestly, like when you're facing a very steep rent payment and don't have a job and aren't sure you can make your dreams come true, that's a whole thing.
No, there's a trial in there for sure. I mean, you jumped with no safety net, which is not easy. Not everyone can do, and you even admitted to this, the stability that we all crave. Sometimes we have to go without, and you did that, and it led you to where you are now, which is totally cool. So what would you say to someone that was like you when you were in California, wanted to be in the industry, maybe another woman that's like, hey, I want to be in the industry. What would you say to them to get amongst it?
Yeah, it's really funny that it used to be that I would get as many meetings with people who work in sports as I possibly could, just to get to know, you know, build my network and get to know their path and stuff. And now people are reaching out to me for that. I'm like, wait, did I just become cool? But whenever they ask me, like, how do I break into this industry? I'm a college student right now or a grad student right now. How do I break in? And honestly, it's knowing people and building that network, because luck is where opportunity meets preparation. So the more prepared you are in terms of like building your, you know, resume, your education, your experience as much as you can, which is, it's so hard to get experience when you don't have experience. So that's a whole other thing. But the opportunity comes through knowing people, where it's someone's like, oh, I have this position open. Who do I know that would be a good fit for this? And you want your name to come to their mind. So how do you continue to make that happen? So I think it's just staying on people's radar. I run a program with a curriculum that I built for players called The Follow-Up, which is the art of maintaining a professional relationship. So I have players text me, be like, Taylor, I did a hashtag The Follow-Up today. Like I met with someone and then I followed up with them and we're going to get coffee again. I'm like, wow, I'm so proud of you. But that's how it has to be done. Because if your name's not on anybody's desk or anybody's mind, like opportunities won't come your way in such a competitive industry. So I would say building and maintaining that network is huge.
Wow. I'm probably best answer of the day. Then you gave us a great segue, because you work so closely with these players. They've obviously learned a lot from you and what you do, but also I'm hearing the opposite is true, is that you've taken so much from them. What do you think has been the biggest takeaway working with these professionals? What have you learned from them? How do you put that back into your daily life?
That's the best part of my job, is getting to know a lot of really incredible people, both players and colleagues, industry professionals. But I know you're asking about players, is some of the best people I know are or were professional athletes. And that is so cool to me. I'm so grateful to now have this network of contacts and friends all over the world who come from a wealth of experience and knowledge and culture that they are kind enough to share with me. Because we've built that relationship and we've built that trust through my role in player engagement. And it feels like anywhere I travel in the world, it's like, oh, I have a friend there. How? Oh, well, you know, my job. Like, that's so cool to be able to have that. And I'm so pleasantly surprised, honestly, by how reciprocal they are about the whole like coming alongside and helping thing, where they are yeah, they're super supportive of me and my career journey. And it's honestly unbelievable. I was just actually right before we started recording this, I was sending a WhatsApp message to my friend and I was saying, like, I'm honestly so grateful for the people that I have around me at work and just in my professional life who teach me so much, teach me language. Like, a lot of times they'll be like, I need to say happy birthday and something like this. Obviously I can Google translate it, but if I want to do something just to make sure it sounds like a local dialect, it's like, I have people I can ask. Like, that's so cool. So I learned so much from them and I'm so grateful for all the experience that they bring to the table when it comes to all different types of things.
Wow. It is such a blessing. I mean, I think travel is big for you, right? And getting immersed in other people's cultures, but you're in a role where, like, the travel comes to you like all the time, and you just bombarded with different cultures and being experienced. There must never be a dull day at the office or working.
No, that's part of the joy of working in sport. And then you add players to the mix and it's like, yeah, never a dull moment, I would say.
All right, so big question. What are you most excited for in your role, in the industry, in your personal life, all three?
Oof. At MLS, let's see. What am I most excited for at MLS? I want to know who's going to lift the MLS Cup trophy this season. I'm really excited.
Are we allowed to hear predictions of who you think it would be?
It's too early for me. I can't. There's only been one weekend.
You have to choose.
Okay. The answer is no. I don't have a prediction. No, I don't. And it's so hard because I was watching, I can't remember what I watched. I think like all nine MLS games last weekend. I have friends on a lot of teams. And so, like, when they're playing each other, it's like, who am I rooting for? And it's just like, I just want them to do well. I feel like such a mom. I just want them to do well. Oh gosh. So I'm really excited about that. And really excited to watch a bunch of games tomorrow. In the industry, in addition to all the strides that I see being made in DE&I, I'm not going to go through all those again. I know I already talked to you off about that. I'm very excited about the 2026 World Cup coming to North America. I think that's going to be something really special. In my life, I'm very excited to finish up law school next year and be done with that. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to the weather getting better and just like doing more things, enjoying New York. And I don't want to say post-pandemic, but at least in a less restrictive way than we have seen in the past couple of years. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah. Amen to that part. That's for those that are listening, we're in New York and it's been restrictive is a good word. And that is now that the weather is getting better. Hopefully this is the end of that and we can do all the things that makes New York, New York, you know, that's the best part about it.
Enjoying the city we love in the way that it's meant to be enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And it could have been enjoyed pre-pandemic, or it was enjoyed pre-pandemic.
It was. We took it for granted though. So now let's not do that again, because
this is true. That's a great point. Yeah, we went outside being like, this could all be taken away from us and we have to stay in our shoebox apartments forever. Like,
It was just like, people are so slow. Like, we were just like, we were worried about the wrong thing. Like, people are here, tourists are like so slow, get out of the way. And then there was nobody in our way. And it's like, dang it. Like, I would kind of miss these slow tourists, you know?
I would totally agree. Our office, we just went back to the office in Major League Soccer a couple of weeks ago, hybrid schedule, whatever. And so I was walking down Fifth Avenue to the office, and normally, like pre-pandemic, like, these tourists need to get out of my way. I'm late for work. I have a meeting. And now I'm like, hi, welcome back. Hello, welcome to our city.
You need help?
You look lost. They're like, we're not. Damn. We're not. I wanted to help.
Like, you're not very New York of you helping. Yeah, I know, but
I don't even care. I'm just excited that you're here.
So fun. Taylor, we could just keep this rolling. I feel like we could just talk football all day and it would work out perfectly. I'm sure you don't want to do that. I'm a geek. I like to geek out on that. So we'll end that here. But what I want to do, first of all, is thank you so much, because what you've done is you've given us two perspectives. One of how athletes can leverage what they've done to start the next chapter. And you've also given us a look into how to get involved even an athlete could, I don't want to say take your position, but could be in a position to then help athletes in that area. And it doesn't just have to be a professional athlete. It could be someone that just wants to be among sports. So you've painted two amazing pictures for people to look at, and hopefully they can get inspired by that and see, hey, I love this game. I love this industry. I can be amongst it. I don't just have to be a player. And that's really our goal here, is just to move the needle in one person's life. So thank you so much for joining and being fully present with us. You're a rock star.
Wow, that's kind of you, but thank you for having me. Honestly, I could chat about this stuff all day, as you just heard a second ago. I just kind of went off on a tangent and forgot about the time. So thank you to the listeners as well for putting up with all that. But no, it's really great to unplug from, like you said at the beginning, the heavy that's going on in the world, and just focus on something that brings us so much joy and gives life so much color.
Where can we find you? Plug some of the social medias.
You can find me probably in front of my TV all weekend watching soccer, but on social media, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at T Wells Mayberry. That's T-W-E-L-L-S. M as in Mary, A as in Apple, B as in Boy, E as in Echo, R-R-Y. And yeah, that's most of it. You can find me on LinkedIn as well, Taylor Wells Mayberry, again, M-A-B-E-R-R-Y.
Okay. There may be some people reaching out to you even more. You're cool now, like you said, in regards to how do I get into the game.
So am I cool? Is it official?
Yeah, it's official. Good. It's cool. It's official. I'm not quite there yet. But as long as one of us is, that's fine.
That's, Taylor, I'll carry that for the team.
Thank you so much.
Thank Speak you.
Thanks for listening to another Cool Down Conversations episode. Through testimony and interviews, Cool Down Conversations is geared to help equip this next generation for a more purposeful, heart-filled, and passionate career. If you like this episode, please feel free to share with friends and family. And if you have any questions at all, don't ever hesitate to reach out at paxtonballardinc@gmail.com. Yup. Yeah.